So we continue to move through this series reflecting on the mercy of our God. And tonight we're given this beautiful parable to help us, that a man had two sons. It's a great beginning, and it establishes already in that opening line those three key characters. We've often called this the parable of the prodigal son, but that doesn't really do it justice, because all three are essential to this story: the prodigal son, the waiting father, and the older brother. All of them are there. We know the details well, that this younger son comes and basically says to his father, "Look, you're dead to me. I consider you as good as dead already. So rather than waiting until you actually die and I get the share of the inheritance, then divide your property now and let me have it." How insulting, how terrible this must have been for the father. And yet, it seems he, with great graciousness, divided the property as quickly as he could so that the youngest son would have his share. And the son goes off, spends all his money in this life of just excess. And then it comes to that moment when all of the money is run out. He's there at the pig's trough, wanting to fill his husk. So depraved had he become that he was even considering doing something so shameful and so terrible. And so he comes to his senses, and then he begins this journey home, this journey back to the house of the father. The speech is all prepared. He's all ready to come bowing and scraping. He doesn't expect to be treated any better than a mere servant, a mere slave. And this moment is such a wonderful turning point. In Hebrew, that expression or that word is this word teshuvah. Teshuvah. Come on, say it with me. Teshuvah. It comes from two root words. This first part, the ter, is from the word tov, which means good. It reminds us of the goodness, first of God, but also of our goodness. This God who is in relationship with us is not about us always being sinful and terrible and pains in the proverbial, but this wonder of a God who says, "No, you're good. You've got to remember that." And the Lord sets us on this path, a path of discovery, a path where we're meant to ponder the word of the Lord, a path where we're meant to walk in the ways of God. But so often we find ourselves wandering away from that path. And so teshuvah is about that sense, that realization that we've left the path we're meant to be on and we've wandered away to this foreign place, a place of depravity, a place of emptiness, a place of famine. And we have this sense of wanting to return to the Father. In Greek, that word is metanoia. It's a wonderful word of this changing of our minds, a changing of our whole call. What we experience at that moment is this call to come on home and to return to the home of the Father, to return to that place where we know there will be abundance. And even more, the son never expected that he would be treated as well as he was. He would never expect that the father would set aside all of his dignity as an elder in that society and come running across to greet him and meet him and unwrap him and enfold him in all of that expression of love, putting the ring on his finger, clothing him, putting the sandals so that he would no longer be marked as a slave, but now as one of the favored members of the household. And then this whole sense of the celebration, come to the feast, come to the party, come to this new life that only God is able to offer to us. That's what this is all about, the wonder of the feast. And then, of course, the older son, we're told, discovers all of this. And he remarks, you know, "All of this time I've slaved away for you, and never once did you offer me so much as a kid, a baby goat, to be able to celebrate with my friends. And here you have killed the fatted calf." Oh, sorry, not that one. That one. The fatted calf. So this image of the fatted calf is, of course, the image of abundance, the image of this absolute excess. You don't kill a fatted calf if you're only wanting to feed just a couple of people. A fatted calf is enough to feed the whole village. This is a serious party that we're talking about, this sense of the abundance of God. And what does the older brother say? You know, you've killed the fatted calf, and never once did you even offer our friend the scrawny little goat from 2 weeks ago. The scrawny little goat, you know, will feed what? 5 people, 10 people? That was his vision. That's his whole sense of God, a God who's stingy, a God who doesn't really care for the sons. And yet, we see in this, the Father wants to be abundant. The Father wants to express his love in every possible way that he can. When the younger son was there in that land of emptiness, the barrenness, he began to experience that call to teshuva, to receive that gift and that life, because it begins with God declaring our goodness and his invitation to come on home. But so often we're like the older brother. We don't even begin to experience that mercy and kindness of God. So in some ways we can see that the two sons represent these two possible visions and images of God. We have the fatted calf, which is about abundance, which is about a God of grace, a God who invites us to celebrate with him, a God who wants us to experience the fullness of everything that he's prepared for us. But so often we've grown up with an image of a stingy God, a God who's not even prepared to give us that scrawny little goat to share with our friends, that sense of just slaving away constantly, of working nonstop in order to be able to experience anything of the goodness of God. And yet his abundance is always so rich and so real. In the Gospel of Matthew, we get another story that's kind of similar in some ways. Jesus tells this story about two servants, both who owed money to other people. The first, we're told, and I'm going to call him Bob, owed a whole truckload of money, 10,000 talents. A talent is a measure of currency, of what you would basically earn over a whole lifetime. It was the equivalent of 6,000 days of working. So if there are 10,000 talents, and if you earned about $200 a day over a lifetime of 20 years of working, you'd earn about $1.2 million. And so the equivalent of 10,000 talents is about $12 million or $12 billion. So it's a pretty serious kind of chunk of money, right? And yet when the man throws himself at the mercy of the king, we're told that the king, who has his book there and he's got it with all of those ledgers and all of those things, and he's been inviting people in to keep track of all of that. And even though he can see all of the pages and pages of debts that Bob has got himself into, the king says, no, I'm going to throw away this as a way of bookkeeping. I'm not going to hold you to that account any longer. But the problem with Bob is he didn't discover this. And so what happens? He goes outside and there he meets another servant, Tom, who's owed a much smaller amount, still significant. It's 100 denarii, again, $200 a day, so about $20,000 worth in terms of what he's owed. So about 3 months of working. It's still a huge amount of money, but it's bearable. You could actually repay this amount. And yet Bob, when he meets Tom, doesn't extend any of the kindness, any of the graciousness, any of the favor that he has, because Bob's still got his book of accounts as well. And even though the king has thrown away his book, Bob clings so tightly to his and says, no, repay everything that you have owed to me. And he throws him into prison until that servant Tom is able to repay the money. When the king hears about this, of course, he's just distraught. He's just shattered to the core. He was so gracious, he was so kind, he was so loving and merciful, and yet Bob didn't seem to understand any of this at all. And so This is where your homework comes in. This is why we have these pieces of paper that were given out before Mass. So the idea is that we take these pieces of paper, and you'll see that in the middle there's a dotted line with the scissors, so you can tear them in half, and that will mean that you will then have two pieces of paper. How cool is that? It's incredible. One piece becomes two. It's like a magic trick. So we have this sense then of the two ways that we are in relationship, the two kinds of groups of people. So we are in relationship with God and then in relationship with others. And so you can write that on the covers if you want, in terms of your relationship with God and your relationship with others. There's a positive side, there's the good side, the things that we do that win our favor with God, with one another. But of course, there's the negatives as well. There's all those things, those dark secret moments in our lives, those things that we're so ashamed of, and those terrible things that we don't want anyone to hear about. It's an exercise that's meant to kind of help us to reflect on where we are right now in terms of our relationship with God and with our friends, and of course with those other unmentionable people, the neighbors, the relatives, the exes, the people that we are struggling to make sense of. God tells us that the master threw away his book. That book would no longer be the mark and measure of Bob. But Bob didn't get it. Bob clung still to his own journal. He clung to his own book. And so Bob wasn't able to live in that freedom, because Bob was not free. All of this was about making Bob free, but he wasn't free because he couldn't forgive his brother Tom. The gospel is a story about God who comes so that we no longer will be bound by this point-keeping system. You know, you don't come to church to win positive points, so you don't do these things and be fearful of all the negative points that you will lose. But no, it's a story about a God who says, no, the point-keeping system was never the story in the first place. This is about grace and mercy and love and kindness, and we are invited to be part of this story. Our book is being thrown away by God, but some of us still want to cling to it. If we want to hold on to the book, God will let us. He will let us cling to that book for dear life. The choice is always ours. So the invitation is to complete the books that you have as representations of your relationship with God, your relationship with others. Don't write your name on it, obviously. And if you want, you can put it in an envelope so no one is able to see what is in there. And we're going to have some baskets here on the sanctuary next week. And the invitation is for you, when you come for communion, that you will bring these books and place them there in these baskets as a representation of all of the things that you've done well and bad in terms of your relationships, all of the friends that you have, all of the enemies that you have. This is a process where we can begin to deal with all of this. And then all of them will be burnt in the fire that we have at the Easter vigil. So this is this invitation to receive this life of grace, to allow the Lord, as he's done in so many other people, as he did for the thief on the cross, as he did for St. Paul, as he did, as we'll see next week, for the woman caught in adultery. This is a story of grace, but only to the extent that we let God share that grace with us.